Morning, church. Good to see you. Welcome. If you're visiting, can I add my welcome to them? Sure, the welcome you received from Andy earlier. My name is Simon Kirby. I'm the vicar here, and it is great to see you. Last week, we started a series on living God's rhythms, and thank you for those who have got in touch and commented that you found it helpful. Always nice to know the sermons are occasionally helpful, but that was a joke. Never mind. But no, thank you. And I'm not surprised, because this thing of rhythm and of feeling out of rhythm is what I talk to people all the time who are just feeling like life is out of control, they're not resting enough, they've got too much on, and they're out of rhythm. And so we're continuing this series of Living God's Rhythm. And if you didn't hear the sermon about rest, I would encourage you to. We start the week today, and today is a Sabbath to get ready for the rest of the week, to get God back into perspective. Now, this second week of the series, I want to look at seasons. And I want to think about times and seasons in life. We're entering a new season, feels a bit more autumnal. Although today it's as good as some of the summer days, but there are mists in the morning. We're entering a new season. And as we think about seasons, I want you to consider the stages of life you're in, you're facing, the challenges that you're facing at the moment. A passage, Ecclesiastes 3. If you've got a Bible, you might want to turn to it. Ecclesiastes 3 says this: "For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down, a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace." What season are you in today? What time is it for you today? Obviously, there's quite a lot of reality TV references in that particular passage. Time to dance, that's obviously Strictly. Time to sow, great British sewing bee. Time to keep silence, that's what we hope for the X Factor. But seriously, the writer of Ecclesiastes recognizes the reality that we face different challenges in our lives at different times, different seasons. Now, the season I was probably least prepared for was parenthood. Nobody told me what was going to happen. It was an extraordinary time, an unbelievable time, full of incredible emotion, full of lots of love, and full of a great sense of being completely out of my depth. I remember changing Tom, my oldest son's nappy, for the first time. It's a good job he's not here today. He wouldn't like me telling this story. I was genuinely terrified I was going to pull off one of his legs. I mean, this small thing. What was I meant to do with it? And you don't get a manual. And then you go through seasons, if you're a parent. You go through seasons, and as you go through these seasons, every time you think you've got it sussed and you know what you're doing as a parent, it changes. It's a new season of parenthood. Sue and I are currently in the season of being empty nesters, although we're adjusting to what that means. At the moment, it looks like the nest is empty for a short length of time, then it fills up again. It involves an awful lot of washing, huge amount of food consumption, and no milk in the fridge. Some of you are into the season of grandparents. I was talking to someone this last week who's spending a lot of time in grandparenting to help their children with childcare. And some ways, these are stage seasons of life. And there are stages of life that we all face, whether we're parents or not. Stage seasons. So this first area is sort of stage seasons, stages of life that we go through. Times when we ask particular questions. Now, in his book, I think I've referred to this book before, The Resilient Life, Gordon MacDonald identifies common questions that people ask in different decades. Gordon MacDonald is now in his 80s, and I had the privilege of spending a day with him earlier in the year. And I think I've shared these questions before, but I feel they're worth sharing again, and I'd recommend the book, The Resilient Life, to you. But as an 80-year-old man, his reflection, and as a pastor, he is very much a pastor, who's pastored hundreds of people over the years. He pastored in some incredibly large churches. Is that these are generalizations, but that in each decade, he's seen similar people asking similar questions as they go through those decades. In the teens, it's the who am I question. Who am I? Questions around identity. I was thinking about this. I'm so glad I'm not a teen now. It was hard enough being a teen then. But actually the challenges with the internet and all of that thrown in. Who am I? Who am I? And then in the 20s, what am I going to do with my life and with whom will I do it? Where can I find a few friends who will welcome me as I am and who will offer me the family-like connections that I need and in some cases never had? In the 30s, how do I manage all the obligations in my life? Family, mortgage. No one ever trained me to manage all of this. And the 40s, how do I feel about progress in my life so far? How satisfied am I? How is my marriage? Is it what I expected if I'm married? Is being a parent if I'm a parent? Why isn't my faith more deep and my character more broad? For some, the 40s can be a decade of disappointment. And sometimes it's the decade we equate with midlife crises when people are asking these doubt questions. And the 50s can be what needs to change in the second half of my life and who are these young people who want to replace me? What do I do with my doubts and my fears? In the 60s, how much longer can I keep doing the things that have defined me? Do I have enough time to do all the things I dreamed of in the past? And that can lead to fear. And in the 70s and 80s, how do I live with the loss that's coming into the world? Friends dying and moving away. How can I remain contributive? How many more years do I have left? Will anyone miss me when I'm gone? Now, as I've read through those questions, they're generalizations, but you may have found yourself asking one of those questions at some time in your life. You may be asking one now or feeling them. And the thing about the stages of life is that we can prepare for them. And not only can we prepare for them knowing that these questions might come along, but equally, there are others who've been through those questions, who are ahead of us on the journey, who've worked out some answers, and they can help us. We can recognize if we're in that season that there are others who can walk with us. I was thinking about this as, again, how important community is, how important it is to share our fears. Love what Jamie said, that how important it is to be real, to share our fears, to recognize that sometimes we look around and we feel everyone else has got it together and it's just me who hasn't. And the truth is everyone else is looking like they've got it together. But everyone has questions, concerns, fears. When we share them with our Connect group, when we share them with our community, they can help us to walk through these stages, these seasons. That's why we have Connect groups. It's why we have alongside us who can come alongside us, who are people maybe who are further along in the journey of faith or life than us, who can come alongside and share from their experience. It's why we're holding a retirement conference in October, because there are others who've been through some of those questions and worked out some of those things. And I think this is the wonderful thing about a church when it's functioning, is that we can help each other work through these stages and seasons of life. In some ways, we can replicate or recreate what used to happen in the villages, not in all villages and not necessarily healthily, but in some villages, there was that sense of the generations sharing with the younger generations, teaching them how to hunt, teaching them skills, helping them going forward. And my hope is as church, we can do that. Over the summer, we had Sean Doherty speak at one of our Summer Wednesday seminars, speaking about Orthodox sexuality. It was an excellent evening. I'd encourage you to listen to his talk online if you weren't there. One of the challenges he left with us is how do we create a community where people feel supported, where they're able to ask difficult questions, and particularly, how do we support single people in our community? How do we support them and put networks and friendships and relationships around them going forward as well? How do we make sure that anyone who wants to be part of our church family, whatever season, whatever stage, whatever is going on, how do we make sure they are supported, helped, encouraged, able to be real, able to ask questions? So as I say, these stages we can prepare for. That's the first thing in seasons. But the second thing, which are harder to prepare for, are the circumstances. When circumstances come along that we had no idea were coming our way. And already I'm sure you can think of some of those. But it appears that the teacher in Ecclesiastes who wrote those words in Ecclesiastes, sometimes we think he was outlining a formula for a balanced life. But it's much more that he was telling us what life is like, not what it should be, but what happens in life. These things occur. These verses describe life more than they offer advice for life. In fact, life contains such a wide range of experiences led the teacher to a somewhat pessimistic rhetorical question in verse 9 where he says, what do workers gain from their toil? These challenges that come along that we read about in those times. When I was studying my first theology degree in the early 90s, the then principal of London Bible College, Peter Cotterill, wrote a book called Mission and Meaninglessness. Mission and Meaninglessness. And the subtitle was The Good News in a World of Suffering and Disorder. It was a light read, lots of smiles. He pointed out that bad things happen to good people, and bad things happen to God's people. Those circumstances come along, and they can put us in seasons that we're not expecting to be in. Now, let's be clear. I don't believe that God makes bad things happen to people, but we do live in a broken world with people around us who have a free choice of the decisions they make and the things they do. So how do we respond when life throws us a curveball? How do we respond when we face illness, relational breakdown, work challenges, unemployment, not getting the promotion we'd hoped for, or something worse comes along? A circumstance we weren't prepared for and nothing could have prepared us for. Most of us, I'm sure, will have sung that song, 10,000 Reasons, by Matt Redman. And most of us, I'd be surprised if we haven't sung a Matt Redman song. He's one of our prolific modern worship writers. I had the privilege of knowing Matt when he was starting out as a young worship leader. He's a wonderfully humble guy. What many of you may not know is his testimony. And his testimony is that age 7, his father died suddenly. And it wasn't until years later that he'd learned his dad had actually committed suicide. He said in an interview, it was like a double blow because it brought up a lot more questions. Redmond says, why did he do that? Was I not enough? Did I have anything to do with that? I don't even have a lot of the memories, to be honest, but I do mark that as a moment when I started to think about God a bit. He then, as a young guy, would walk to church, to St. Andrew's Chorley Wood, where he met Mike Pilavachi, who was his youth worker at the time. And between them, they sort of launched Soul Survivor a few years later. But this was before he was a worship leader. This was when he was a young man. And on those days, when the rest of the family chose to stay at home, he walked to church. Years after his father's passing, his mother remarried, but her new husband abused the family's trust. And Matt again found himself turning to the church. His faith and music more than ever helped him make sense of the struggles in life. He says, things got very dark there in my teenage years, but again, by the grace of God, I decided to trust him and trust that he was in control. Even though I couldn't understand anything he was doing, just trusting that he was watching over me. I think I can trace a lot of what I do now, the songwriting and all of it, to those key moments. You know, when we're facing the challenges of some seasons that we were not expecting, how do we respond? See, Matt's response, and I saw it in his life, and I see it in his worship even now. His response was to throw himself into God, to throw himself into God. And I see often when challenge in our season comes along, people can respond in two ways. One is to run from God. The other is to run to God. And I would encourage you, if you're in a difficult season at the moment, don't deny that it's a difficult season, but throw yourself into God, because he is with you in that season. Now, as I continue and as I was thinking of the seasons, there's a real danger that we interpret the Bible through our own understanding. And so we might interpret the seasons in the Bible through our own understanding of the seasons in the UK, spring, summer, autumn, winter. But actually the seasons in the Bible, really in Israel, there were only two seasons, summer and winter. There wasn't an autumn and spring. If you Google seasons in Israel, you'll come up that one of the first things that comes up is TripAdvisor, which says, generally speaking, there are two seasons in Israel, the winter and the summer. The winter is colder with showers and the summer is hot. It's just two seasons. And actually, if you look at the Bible, it only ever really talks about two seasons. It talks about summer and winter. In Genesis 8:22, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. And then in Psalm 74, you have fixed all the boundaries of the earth. You have made summer and winter. Now, if there's just two seasons, then the chances are we're in one or the other of them. We're either in summer or we're in winter. Or maybe we're coming out of winter into summer, or maybe we feel like actually we've just moved from summer into winter. And the truth is, for some of us this morning, it will be summer, for summer, winter, and some actually it will be a bit of a mix. There'll be some things in life going which we are rejoicing over, while some things that are really tough. But again, as we face these seasons, what is our response? How do we work it through? I was reading this morning quite early the Bible in a year from Alpha, and I was just struck by the story this morning, because it was of Nick Wojcik. And Nick Wojcik, if you haven't seen his story, Google him. You won't be able to spell his surname, but Google him anyway. And he was born without arms and legs. He speaks at Focus. He's incredibly inspiring. There's some YouTube stuff about him. And as Nicky Gumbel says, he came to speak at Focus, our church holiday, in 2011. He's a remarkable man. All of us who met him were inspired and challenged by his life. Nick was born without arms or legs, yet he can write, "I am truly blessed. I am ridiculously happy." Many times as a child, he prayed for arms and legs. He would have settled for getting one arm or one leg. But God did not answer his prayer in the way that he hoped. Yet he writes, "God used me to reach people in countless schools, churches, prisons, orphanages, hospitals, stadiums, and meeting halls even better. I've hugged thousands of people in face-to-face encounters that allow me to tell them how very precious they are. God took my unusual body and invested me with the ability to uplift hearts and encourage spirits." You know, whatever we face, whatever is going on in our season, we can face it with the knowledge that God is with us, God can strengthen us, and that season will come to an end. There is summer after winter. We can see an end to it. The final thing I wanted to say, just very briefly, is if you turn to John 15, a very well-known passage about Jesus and talking about the branch and the vine. "Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit." And just that sense of whatever is going on in our life, for some of us, this season is actually a pruning season. Even if we're growing, there are times when there is pruning. And pruning leads to further growth. And pruning, what should pruning do? Pruning should push us again back to the Father. "Abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." And so whether it's a winter season, whether it's a summer season, whether it's a pruning season, whether you're in a fruitful season, I would encourage you to keep coming back to God, to keep pushing back to the Father, finding him, throwing yourself back on him, relying on him, knowing that he is with and for you. He will not let you go. Mother Teresa wrote, "I don't think there is anyone who needs God's help and grace as much as I do." She's just been sainted. "I don't think there is anyone who needs God's help and grace as much as I do. Sometimes I feel so helpless and weak. I think that is why God uses me, because I cannot depend on my own strength. I rely on him 24 hours a day. If the day had even more hours, then I would need his help and grace during those as well." What season are you in? What help do you need? Our great loving Father has love and grace for each of us.